Hello, Idaho. It's Ashley Jackson, and I am so excited today. We have someone on the show that I admire. He is from Sandpoint, Idaho, and not only is he the mayor, but he is a champion for the people up there. Mr. Shelby Ronstadt, welcome to the show.
Ashley, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah.
And hello, all your listeners.
Yeah, thanks. You know, the show Hello, Idaho is really about showing people that not only is it okay to have a healthy communication channel with anyone, it's also okay to have it with people that you directly are opposed with, right? And we just finished the most interesting campaign cycle of a primary election in Idaho, where you ran as a write-in candidate for the Democrats, correct?
Yep, write-in as governor.
Tell me about how this transpired.
Well, you know, I had been considering running for statewide office for a couple of years, and the opportunity came up this year. I was actually initially recruited by the chair of the Democratic Party. I had never been registered as a Democrat, interestingly. I had always considered myself an independent, more of a moderate, but increasingly I identify with the values of the Democratic Party, particularly as we see the Republican Party, in my view, shift further and further to the right. I feel like it kind of left me and many Idahoans behind. So when this opportunity came up, I knew the Democrats were looking for a candidate for governor. I considered it. I had been registered Republican ever since the Republicans had closed the primary back in 2011, 12. So that I could vote in the Republican primaries because, as you know, particularly in a red district like where I live in a very red county, if you want to have an impact in local elections, you have to affiliate Republican. Otherwise, your voice does not count because typically there are no Democratic primaries. If you know, we're lucky if we have a Democratic candidate at all in a local race. So for that reason, I'd been, you know, years registered as a Republican. But I decided, okay, I'm going to do this. I've got on the Secretary of State's website. I affiliated myself as a Democrat for the first time. And I was shocked to discover, fast forward, March 11th was the filing deadline when we submit our candidate filing. Came down to here to Boise, went into the Secretary of State's office. It was about 1:30 in the afternoon. And submitted my filing. Of course, when you submit your filing, you have to declare right there on the form your party. So I did that. I thought, all is well, right? I'm watching the candidates, the list of candidates, you know, get refreshed on the Secretary of State's website every hour or so. Well, here it is now 5 o'clock. And I'm like, my name's still not showing up. What's going on? Well, my campaign team gets a call from my county, from someone in my county up in Bonner County. And it turns out they had overheard a conversation that apparently there was a problem with my party affiliation. I log onto the Secretary of State's website. Sure enough, they still have me affiliated as a Republican. Mm. And so, of course, I changed my party affiliation there again on their online tool. And it was after the 5 o'clock deadline. The Secretary of State that next Monday made a determination that because of that, they were not going to accept my filing. So at that point, I had a decision. I could either sue the Secretary of State, and you know, I found that interesting. We thought we had a great argument because Section 34703 states very, Idaho Code states very clearly that a candidate must be affiliated with a political party at the time of filing, not the political party for which they are filing. It says plain English. So we made that case to the Secretary of State. In addition to that, there's also Idaho case law that shows that the very act of filing itself is affiliating yourself with the party because you have to mark which party you're filing for, right? So we thought we had a strong case. I was shocked that the Secretary of State rejected my filing.
So Lawrence Watson himself gets to decide that? The Secretary of State was Lawrence Watson, just that's who it is.
Lawrence Denny.
Lawrence Watson was the AG. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
Lawrence Denny. No, but Lawrence Denny himself said, I get to make this determination.
Yeah, so they had a...
Did they have a record of you initially changing your party?
They did not.
Did you have a record of that?
I did not. And believe me, I regret it to this day.
Okay,
and,
I
you know, I take full responsibility for what I should have done is I should have gone in a week earlier so that if something like this were to happen, then I could have had a chance to correct it. And I also could have and should have verified and double checked to make sure that I was, affiliated properly. I didn't do that. Nonetheless, I also, would posit that, Secretary of State also should have followed the law.
Yeah. So that's an interesting. So then you only had the choice. Do I write as a write-in candidate?
Right.
Which anyone can do that. Or do I not run at all?
Well, yeah, or I could have sued. And so, that first week we were considering all options. And to this day, I kind of go back and forth on what would have been the best choice there in terms of the outcome. And certainly given where we're at today, probably the better choice would have been to sue. But I thought, at that time it seemed like, either way was an expensive proposition.
Yeah.
Had I put that money into the lawsuit, I basically would have blown all of my fundraising on attorneys and I would have just left it in the hands of the court. This way, running as a writing campaign, I could at least put that money into the campaign. It would enable me to continue to get my message out there to the voters. And I thought, if we're successful, that'll pay off in the long run because it's essentially going to be an investment into the general election. So that's the choice we made. And, I feel good about the campaign we ran and that we're able to get our message out there. I tell you, fundraising as a write-in is a hard task. And I was really proud of our team that we were able to still pull in, over 50,000 in those last 8 weeks, which is really, really good given, how difficult getting people excited about a write-in campaign is. So,
right, and that's something we really should touch on, right? You're not taken seriously in Idaho or in politics in general unless you have money behind you. And they can see that on the books, right? And I learned that quite quickly.
Yeah, that's true.
And so you have legitimacy, you have the money behind you, you are a current mayor of a town in Idaho, and you also have the willingness, right? You want to work for the people.
Absolutely.
So the fact that they didn't let you, did people cover that story at all?
I was pretty much lambasted in the media with that one.
What does lambasted mean? For just like everybody?
Hit pieces. I got hit pieces.
Oh,
yeah.
So they were out to get you, like slam, bam.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much the only media I got, the only significant coverage I got were hit pieces around this event. So it was really hard to get really any coverage of my message. And that was a frustrating part of the campaign. And a large part of that is because, press, I think for the most part, the press out there, they're hardworking, they're dedicated, they're fair. And I know that there's a principle in publishing in the media where you want to give candidates in elections equal opportunity, equal chance. And I have friends in the media, and I know that if they're going to cover one candidate, then they want to give equal and fair opportunity to cover each candidate in that election, which makes it really difficult when you've got an election with 10 candidates.
But Shelby, let's be honest here. KXLY out of Spokane, they called up every single, Republican candidate, and they got their view on abortion, and they ran a story in Washington, in Spokane, and it was all of 2 hours or 5 hours to gather that information and give it to the public. So I understand what you're saying, and I believe you, because that's what they told me too, right? They said, we have to cover all the candidates equally, and they have this, narrative. But when I was a child, right, I was from southeastern Idaho, and the Pocatello News every single night would put a different candidate on and talk about that candidate, talk about their family, talk about whatever it was, so you could get to know them. Fast forward, I'm 36 now, obviously that's not happening. And I noticed, I started to TikTok, and that people were angry, right? They want to know. They deserve to know. So now that we have this interesting debacle that has happened, go on. You're headed back to Sandpoint today.
Well, actually, I want to go back to the point you just brought up because, okay. You know what? Interestingly, KXLY, They didn't reach out to me.
Right.
They reached out to my opponent.
Right.
And every Republican candidate. So, and this is interesting because with KXLY, I'm from there. That's my media market, right? I actually went to their office. I took myself down there to their studio. It was the day before the filing. I think it was March 10th. I stopped in their studio and did an in-person interview there. It was brief.
Yeah.
They didn't air it, and they didn't bother to reach back out when they were covering the rest of the gubernatorial candidates on their abortion stance.
And I'm just going to go out there on a limb, because what we're about to do is I want you to tell us what you're really about, right? Let's get into the really good part of Shelby, which is how you really help your community. But the reality is if you don't fit the narrative of the current establishment, they are willing to go as far as it takes to make sure you're silenced. And that's just my opinion, and that's my opinion based on, you know, experience from the last 6 months. Is what I would say. So I'm sorry that happened. It's challenging though, because you are a champion for the people, right? And so you expect people to champion for you when you're in the corner and you have your back to the wall. And so because that doesn't happen, it's disheartening sometimes. And that's part of politics, right? Politics is pretty standalone, kind of feeling alone out there in the middle of nowhere on the leading edge of society sometimes.
Yeah, well, and let me share this part too, because here I was running a race again against the candidate who was on the ballot.
What's their name? Let's just
Stephen Hite.
Okay.
Yeah. So Stephen Hite was on the ballot as the only Democratic candidate whose name appeared on the ballot, and he was not willing to debate me in public and was not engaged with the media. So regardless of my desire to try to get my message out there and get some print, because he was not willing to do that, the press wouldn't cover me.
Right.
Because, again, you know, from their perspective, it came back to equal opportunity. Well, how is it fair for a candidate who's trying to get their message out, that's an important message for Idahoans out there, if their opponent is unwilling to address the media?
Absolutely. This was the same exact thing with Brad Little, right? I even spoke to him at the University of Idaho. I gave him my book about cannabis, right? Because marijuana saved my life when I was 26. I'm tired of having to help moms get it illegally here. That's not fun to watch them debate if they have to go to jail or not. And just outright, flat out, no. There's no response, a turnaround right in your face. And it's terse, and it's apparently posturing, but the reality is we're in the 21st century and we need communication and leadership back in the driver's seat instead of posturing and divisive politics.
That's right.
So again, I'm sorry. it's not a fun thing to have to drag through, but it's important for the viewers and the listeners to know that this is happening, right? And that's a part of the reason Hello Idaho is going on, so that people can have an inside look at what actually goes on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And, you know, I appreciate that you bring up the issue of cannabis, because especially as a Republican, you know, seeking higher office, you know, Idaho, I mean, here we are, you know, the last state in the nation that has not budged with our policy with regards to cannabis. This is a medicine that is helping people across the world. And there's so much science and so much evidence behind it. And then not only that, but we have forward-looking states and we're surrounded by states who've taken a much more progressive stance with cannabis. Idaho is the lone holdout out of 50 in the nation. And much more progressive states around us have turned this, instead of a criminal issue, they've turned it into a public health issue. And more than that, they've regulated it and taxed it and used those funds to further citizens' priorities across the state. And here we are in Idaho, where we struggle to meet basic needs, basic funding for public education, basic funding for public health, for healthcare. And this is, you know, in the wake of, or in the midst of, Republican legislature and a Republican governor that have refused to fund Medicaid expansion, even though 62% of voters said, this is what we want.
Right.
62% of voters, by the way, that's a hell of a lot of Republicans and independents. There's only 30% Democrats in this state. That's a hell of a lot of Republicans and independents that voted for Medicaid expansion.
And part of that's that aging population. Part of that's that population that struggles in middle class, blue collar work ethic population that we're losing. Right?
That's right.
And that's challenging.
And if we were to legalize cannabis, we would not only take a lot of people out of our prison system and you know, reduce the incarceration rates, but we would be taking those tax dollars and funding education, which has been grossly underfunded in this state. We could fund healthcare, which has been grossly underfunded in this state, and actually help people.
Yeah, how about infrastructure?
Absolutely.
How about funding, figuring out how to get our infrastructure under wacky control around here, especially in Boise, right?
That's right.
It's a big infrastructure problems. I agree with you there. And that's something that I firmly believe the GOP is 100% on the wrong side of cannabis, that we've ceded the issue to actually out to the Democrats because, unfortunately, we're scared, right? As Republicans, sometimes it's a change is harder than others. And so...
And I tell you, Democrats in this state are afraid of the issue, too.
Oh, man, everybody's afraid of the issue. And, you know, part of it is that the fear that comes from all the law enforcement tactics and, you know, fear-mongering where they pull you over on the side and they bounce your car and whatever happens, right? But they're still going over the border to get it. We spend over $100 million out of state right now, Shelby. So I will continue to fight that fight, too, and I will unify with people like you to fight that fight because at some point we all just have to write some legislation and introduce it and go champion for that. And if you're in Congress or not, you can do that.
You know, another interesting fact, you know, you think about the farmers here, particularly in southern Idaho, as we continue to face further and further drought conditions, cannabis is a plant that offers so much, so many different resources, not just medicine, food, fiber. It's a cash crop.
Right. The industrial hemp opportunity and the farm to table opportunity where 10th, 11th, and 12th graders could learn about industrial hemp and we could lead the nation in industrial hemp production and ease the burden on the logging industry that's going on, right? We could build houses out of hemp. Mm-hmm. I'm all about it.
You know what else? It uses far less water than corn or any other of the other crops that we grow down here.
The educational piece will be key, and it'll come from podcasts. It'll come from people like us who are willing to do it in a palatable way, right? And that's all it needs to be is somewhat fun and entertaining. Education needs to be spun that way again. I think we've moved away from that. Sometimes I feel like education is pitted up right against politics right now. It's you know, both things are distasteful, and the reality is we need to make them appetizing for people again, something they want to get involved in their community. So let's talk about your community, though, up in Sandpoint, right? You're a second-term mayor. Mm-hmm. So you served for 4 years, and then they reelected you for 4 years, which is, like, unheard of in Idaho, right? It's hard.
I'm actually the second two-term mayor in half a century up there, the second in Sandpoint's entire history.
Yes. Congratulations. Thank you. Means you're doing something right. How many
people
are in Sandpoint?
And it also speaks of how difficult it is to continue to run in politics up there, I think, in that area. You know, Sandpoint, Bonner County in general is, I would say it's, or at least I have thought of it as politically diverse, meaning that, you know, there's a pretty broad, you know, I would say, you know, all the different sort of the full spectrum of politics is fairly equally represented up there from the left to the right. But you know, I've seen that spectrum shift over the last 10 years for sure.
Because you were born and raised in Lewiston, Idaho.
I was born and raised in Lewiston. I've lived in Sandpoint for 23 years. I moved up there in 99. And believe me, it has changed a lot, particularly in the last 10 years. But nonetheless, I would still say that it's, you know, there's a fair amount of political diversity there in the city itself. That's how I was able to continue to get elected there. If you look at, you know, our state representatives and senators that are elected in District 1, they're very conservative. You wouldn't see, you know, anyone that I've seen who's anywhere near me. I would consider myself more of a moderate, left of center, but a moderate. But you don't see any, even moderates, really have a shot at those district-wide positions up there these days.
Why do you think that is?
Because the demographic has shifted. You know, we continue to see this incredible growth in Idaho. And up where we're at in the North Idaho Panhandle, it's growing faster than anywhere else in the state per capita. Coeur d'Alene, is just growing like gangbusters, and even up north where I'm at, growing like gangbusters. So we've seen incredible growth, but the majority of that growth is coming from people all over the country. Of course, everybody says California, and yes, California is leading all other states in terms of—
They had the most people anyway, though.
They had the most people anyway. But we are becoming essentially a haven for far-right activism, far-right political ideologies that migrate to Idaho.
You do see
Idaho.
That?
Absolutely.
Up there?
Absolutely.
And is that the Ammon Bundy stuff going on, or—
Yeah, you know, it's
the Janice McGee, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people that support Ammon support Janice. So that's really, I think, the shift in the demographics that we're seeing. But it's been record growth, you know, for the last five, six, maybe seven years even. And Idaho's been, of course, in the top two or three. I mean, this year we were number one. We've been number one several out of the last 5 years, and we've been in the top three for the last seven or so years in the country. So,
and there's no way, right? And there's no way those people coming here aren't going to demand that they have excellent schools for their children in the near future. And then, you know,
actually, that's the difference. So the people that are attracted to the quote unquote extremism that they see as Idaho, right? They don't want schools. They don't want public schools at
they
all.
They want homeschools.
They want homeschools. Everything. That's right.
It's interesting because
or church-based schools.
Yeah.
But you're right. If we want to see business growth in Idaho, what businesses want, they want a qualified, well-trained, educated workforce.
Yeah.
If you want to grow your business, you want to have a workforce that's able to do the job.
Well,
right?
It seems like you found a place for all these things in your community. If you're the mayor, you found a place that people could be inclusive, even if you have some divisive stuff going on. Because you created an app for your community, yeah?
Yes.
Tell me, you've created things where people can be involved, and that's really your target, is to get people involved in leadership, right?
That's right. Yeah, thanks for recognizing that, Ashley. That's astute of you. We created, I think it was the first mobile app in Idaho for a municipality, and maybe the first in the inland Northwest, I believe, including like Eastern Washington, Western Montana, et cetera. It's called Engage Sandpoint. I think we launched in, 2018, I believe.
And does your office own this app? Just explain to me or the public how it works, right? Like your office created it.
Yeah, well, we reached out to a firm that has the technical capacity, right? And they helped brand it for us and basically give it the features that we wanted. And, you know, we kind of designed it, but they built it for us, right?
Right.
It's called Engage Sandpoint. And basically, it was part of a larger initiative to broaden citizen civic engagement throughout the city. So there were a number of elements to that initiative, but this app was one of them. And it really just kind of put the power of civic engagement in people's hands to be able to, you know, basically, like one of the features on the app is you can call out any issues that you see in your community from,
can you be anonymous?
A pothole.
Like,
what's that?
Is it anonymous or you have to?
Yeah, so you have the choice. It can be anonymous if you don't feel comfortable sharing who you are, or you can attribute it to yourself, and then you know that helps. There, you know, so you have the
feedback.
Option.
Yeah, it provides feedback.
Provides great feedback
for your office and for the people that are in power, so that they can do something about what the concerns are.
That's right.
I like this.
And then the other things, of course, you know, the basic stuff. You can, you know, fill out a, get a dog license, or you know, fill out any basically a lot of the features that you'd have to go to the office for and engage that way or go online, you can simply do on your mobile app. So it was a great tool for us. You know, we've done other things to really make civic engagement more accessible. Before this whole COVID thing started, you know, we started streaming creating online participation for our community meetings, our city council meetings, planning and zoning meetings, et cetera, online before the whole COVID thing happened. we definitely upgraded our system. You know, when that became the way to do it and the way that everybody was do it, we definitely, you know, took it to the next level and really broadened that online engagement. But yeah, so those were all components of our engagement strategy to really just, you know, because there was a lot of criticism, and you know, I criticized the government too when I was getting involved in public service. That, yeah, well, of course we need more transparency. You know, of course government should be as transparent as possible, and of course we should make government as easy for people to engage and participate as possible.
Right, and that's why we have Hello Idaho, because this is a group of mentors that I've partnered with, and I hope to partner with you, where if someone in the community, let's say you're in high school or you're a young adult or wherever you're at, and you think you're going to run for office, right? What does it look like to figure out how to have you as a mentor on some level, right? And that's what we're working through at Hello Idaho. How do we pass down these teachable skills and these learned skills through easy interactions, right? Is it a one-day workshop in your community where people that are interested in that come and they get to learn about what does the day in the life of Shelby look like as the mayor? What are the things that I take care of and how does it work, right? If we had that in the higher up leadership here, that would be incredible. And I ran on that policy, right? Transparency is the key, right? Responsibility, accountability, and transparency. And so hopefully with this transparent interaction we're having today, we're showing the public that no matter what, you know, far right or far left or wherever you feel that day, it's also okay to come to the table and realize that leadership means you have tough conversations even when you don't want to, and you do it in a respectful, kind, courteous way. So I appreciate you being on here today. What if someone was going to get involved in politics right now, what would you tell them?
Do it. Go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, talk to people. Challenge your assumptions. You know, this is the problem that I see with this this extremism that I talk a lot about on the campaign trail. It's the problem with the extremism, I believe, is that it's a problem when we're unwilling to talk to people that we don't agree with, mm-hmm. right? If you're willing to go out there and challenge your assumptions and challenge your beliefs, that's a strong candidate. That's somebody who's willing to actually represent the people, mm-hmm. not just represent a select group that only those that agree with them. And then we've got too much of that going on in the legislature right now. We've got too much of that going on in leadership, in positions of leadership right now. We need elected officials that are actually willing to learn, actually willing to talk to other people, challenge their own assumptions, grow as a public servant, as a leader. And that's how we get elected officials that actually are best able to serve their constituents.
Right. I saw you have a community meeting once a month with your, you know, you have like these opportunities for people to get involved, and that's what we seek to have more of.
That's right.
People like you with the determination to have people get involved. So I hope that in the future we have another one of these meetings and it looks different than this. Do you plan to run again?
Right now I certainly don't have any plans, but you know, I'm a young man. At least I hope I'm still a young man.
You are.
And you know, anything's on the table. You know, I'm really grateful to my wonderful wife, Katie, who supported me in this campaign. I'm so grateful to had an incredible team of volunteers that really poured their heart and soul into this campaign, and none more involved and committed and willing to sacrifice than my wife, Katie. And she's had to sort of put her career and her ambitions on the sidelines while I've done this adventure. So I think it's my turn to support her now for a little while, and then we'll see where that takes us.
Sacrifice, right? Giving up something good for something better sometimes.
That's right.
And that's an incredible trait to have. So I appreciate you coming on today. Hopefully, if people listen to this, they can take something away from it. Like, hey, why don't we go forward in time and get an app for all the communities in our state? Why don't we use Shelby's model? That would be a great thing to pick up. So I appreciate your time. Have a great time going back to CM Point. And if you want to come on the podcast, or you know someone who has an amazing experience or a story, or they have competence in their industry, go ahead and contact me. HelloIdahoPodcast@gmail.com. My name is Ashley Jackson. I just ran for governor of Idaho. And let me tell you, whatever you want to do, go do it. Now is the time. Have a great day. Thanks for joining me on this episode of Hello Idaho. Make sure you like, follow, and subscribe so you can see the next one. The episode has also been sponsored by cowboyoutlets.com, where you can get all of your Western wear needs, especially those boots you've been looking for at a great deal.